So thank you all for coming back to this Kabura. This is going to be the last, I guess, introductory Kabura in terms of methodology. One thing that was common between Reb Soloveitchik and the Lubavitch Rebbe that we went through the last 2 weeks was that they were all source-based. Reb Soloveitchik's whole philosophy, whole methodological approach was to... Was to start from the sources, particularly the halachic sources, develop lumdas from there, and then ask the question, what does this mean to me? How do I integrate this lumdas into my religious life? How does it help me achieve tzvikus? And that, for him, was what he called Jewish philosophy. And therefore, that aspect is going to be individualized, but you're always starting with the sources. We saw the Lubavitch Rebbe last week also always starts with the sources, builds out from the sources, with a large admiration for Chidushim, particularly for Kedushim, the role of Chassidus, and particularly for Kedushim, the role of Chassidus, which forces you to re-understand the other aspects of the Torah in light of the mission of the last generation, which is to create a Dira B'Tachtonim. And hopefully we'll be able to unpack all those things in future Kabbalas. Rav Kook doesn't do that. Rav Kook is different than the other two in terms of his methodology. He doesn't start off with sources. A classic piece, source number one, this is a random piece in Orat Teshuva. I chose it because it's short. His kochet, a feel of kashub of chataim, any sin, even the lightest of all sins, matzbiya bekarav adam sin of ezabriya, causes you to hate something, hate somebody. By the tshuva, chazaras ava lehair, and through tshuva you begin loving people again. So what's the connection between sins and hating people and tshuva and loving people? Where is he coming from? What are the sources for this? How did he get this? We have absolutely no idea. It's a very nice piece. I think Tamar Ross has an article which he points out at the beginning. That's reading Rav Kook is sometimes it's like listening to a nice piece of music. Like you don't really understand what's going on, but it makes you feel really nice and warm on the inside. So like this is peace. It makes you feel good on the inside. But like, where is it coming from? Is there a methodology here? Is there a systematic philosophy? What are the principles? What sources are you using? Hardly anything is there in Rav Kook. What I want to go through today is, where did this come from? I think parts of this Kabura, some people in the room might have heard before. I don't have so many introductions to Rav Kook. I basically have one. So this is the way I try to, at least for me, was a good introduction to the thought of Rav Kook. In terms of sources, so we know from memoirs of people, we know from people who are close to Rav Kook. Rav Kook really knew Kol Torah Kula. He was a child of prodigy. He was one of these European Iluyim. He had Shas Rishonim post Gem on his fingertips. He had Sefer Kabbalah on his fingertips. But he didn't quote any sources. The only time I'm familiar with that he actually addressed the issue of not quoting sources was in a letter to his parents, source number two. This is after he was already Rav Rashi of a British mandate in Palestine, and he already published the book Orot in 1920 or 21, and the book Orot was already put in Chirim by the Rabbanim in Yerushalayim. So you might think, like, you know, your prized son, he becomes Rav Rashi in Yerushalayim, first Rav Rashi in Yerushalayim, and then 2 months later, you find out that his book was put in Chirim. So Rav Kook wanted to preempt the news getting to his parents, so he sends him a letter explaining what happened. So he says, "Al-Zmar ha-Rovnim of Binyan ha-Orot, Im Assembly." Don't pay attention to those people who are complaining about the book Orot. Exactly, we're in one source we have here. Kachahu Darak Shal Hashem Merigilim Shalom La'Ayin B'Hakoseos. This is what people do if they don't in Hakoseos in Jewish philosophy. They start getting annoyed and start protesting every single pshat that seems to them as new. Everything I say is ancient and it's all sourced in something. And I'm not the first person to suffer this pain, probably according to the Rambam. Other people didn't source their material, seemed to be saying new things, and people protested against them. For me, it's enough that the straight people understand things. They have true Yira Shemayim. And they will benefit spiritually from these things that I publish from time to time. Rav Kook had many more diaries, many more notebooks that he didn't publish, but every once in a while he decided to publish something. It says, "L'v'ayaris ha'makoros ein to'elas." To explain the sources, there is no purpose. Usually the source doesn't directly explain what I'm saying, my thought. It lights it up, enlightens it, points in that direction, shows it, my thought, after deep thought, after contemplation, and deep emotion, and deep feeling. And these people who are complaining, they won't, even if I show them that this idea is sourced in the Medrash, this idea is sourced in the Zohar, this idea is sourced in the Arizal, they're not going to be satisfied with this anyway, because it's not a linear, direct line between the source and what I'm saying. So Rav Kook, it's very clear that there's a lot of subjectivity, a lot of internal development that's percolating in Rav Kook's mind that ended up producing the Rav Kook's notebooks, Rav Kook's pieces as we have them. Right? He says everything is sourced somewhere, but unless you're him, you have his mind, and you understand what's going on, you're not necessarily going to understand the connection between the original source and the end result that we have no roads or any other of the books of Rav Kook. Rav Kook's Talmidim, most notably the Nazir, went through some of the Sfarim. The Nazir went through Eretz HaKodesh, he edited Eretz HaKodesh, and he gives you sources. He gives us this idea, most of them are from Sefer Kabbalah, but he gives you sources, or at least where the phrases Rav Kook uses are coming from. Rav Kook, reading Rav Kook is like reading a Ramban. Every other phrase is an allusion to something. You just have to know Kol Torah Kula and all of Kabbalistic literature to be able to understand what the allusions are. That's why I don't claim expertise in Rav Kook. It's really daunting to know that I've spent a lot of time reading Rav Kook, but I still don't know some of the ABCs, because a lot of these pieces I just pass over technical terminology because I just don't know what the Kabbalistic literature is. That's why it's important to read articles or learn from people who actually are familiar with the source material. Great. So first thing we know about Rav Kook, everything is sourced somewhere, but it's hard to actually trace things back to the sources. Next thing to know about Rav Kook is his own self-definition. Who was Rav Kook in his own mind? So Rav Kook, in his diaries that only got published later on, in the 1980s, Rav Kook writes a lot about the tzaddik. That's just one random piece, source number three. This kvatzim ksav yakacho karach beis pinkas adapim dalav enzayim, whatever it is. Says yeshtam tzaddikim shesmeim him odit kavut ar lakim bilvavam. There are some tzaddikim out there who are very thirsty for the divine revelation And what do they want to do? They want to say Yochei Vavke. They want to pronounce God's name. In order to be filled from the shine of the Shekhinah. But they don't do it. They don't say Yochei Vavke, because they know that the aura of the Shekhinah that existed in times of the Mikdash, when Yochei Vavke is able to be said, can't exist nowadays, can't be revealed nowadays. So what do they do? So Rav Kook says what they do is that when they're learning, they use one of the kinuyim that we actually could use, Elokim, they pronounce it with a hey. When they're writing something, they actually write down Yud Kei Vav Kei at times. And by doing this, they're able to satiate their desire to a degree. Rav Kook, we know, used to carry notebooks around in his pockets, and he used to stop in the middle of what he was doing, and he used to jot things down in his notebooks and then continue on his way. We have this in the memoirs of his students. So for all we know, Rav Kook was at some political meeting between the local Arabs and British officials in Yerushalayim. He walked out and he wrote down this piece and he continued on his way. He wrote based on flashes of inspiration, as we'll see. How does he know this is what tzaddikim feel? How does he know this is what tzaddikim actually experience? And this is the strategy tzaddikim have when they have this feeling? Because he self-defined himself as a tzaddik. Look at source number four. Chadarav is somebody who went through Rav Kook's notebooks and took out the first-person passages and organized them. He took out first-person passages. Is it for naught, this is worthless, this feeling, this desire that I have to pronounce Yud Kei Vav Kei? Is it not a holy fire that burns my soul? That illustrates how deeply bound I am, how deeply I desire the light of Hashem. So what we have in the third person passage, that this is what tzaddikim desire, elsewhere in his own writings, in a different notebook from a different year, we have his first person passage where Kook himself desires this. And what's important to realize is that many of us use the term tzaddik as a generic term, a nice guy, a righteous person, somebody who has more zuchiyos than averos. But as I'm sure you're all aware, in Hasidic literature and Kabbalistic literature, the term tzaddik is a technical term. As Tanya explained at the very beginning, a tzaddik is somebody with a different level of neshama, higher spiritual stature, and many times they're just born that way. And they're just born in a higher spiritual level, and they have a certain avodah in this world because of that higher spiritual level. Rav Kook writes a lot about the avodah Hashem of a tzaddik in his Shemona Kvatzim, in his notebooks, in his diaries, and there are many parallel passages of those things he talks about tzaddikim in first person, in other passages in the same notebooks or in different notebooks. So Dr. Smadar Sholal, Rabbi Yehuda Sholal's wife, who recently got her PhD in Bar Ilan on the Torah of Kluk, published a dissertation, I think in 2012. The book is called Tzadik Yisod Olam, like Tzadik Yisod Olam, that's a pasuk associated with Tzadik. Hashlicho Tamistit Shel Tzadik Miyafo, the mystical mission of the Tzadik of Yafo, tracing this idea in Rav Kluk's notebooks and his diaries. Rav Kluk self-defined, very clearly, self-defined as a classic Hasidic Tzadik, the capital TC, capital Tzadik. And he says explicitly in his notebooks, which never meant to be published, that it's a matnas elokim, it's a matnas kinam. This is just the way he was born, and he has a certain avodah to do because of it, but this is just the way he was born. Just to note that Rav Kluk, many of us are familiar with Rav Kluk as a Zionist, as a political leader, as a leader of a movement. Somebody, again, who was dealing with Arab officials, British officials, went on a fundraising trip to America. Somebody who wrote Shuvos. Somebody who was a chief rabbi. And all that is true. But, again, Rav Kluk's own self-definition, and the Rav Kluk that his close circle of students knew, was Rav Kluk as the Mekubal. As Rav Kluk, not just as a theoretical Mekubal, but Rav Kluk as a very, very live Kabbalist, who is very mystically inclined, very connected to Hashem. Just one example out of many, source number 5 is Heit Harim. Heit Harim are letters from Yaakov Moshe Harlap, who was one of Rav Kluk's main Talmidim in Eretz Israel, the grandfather of Rabbi Zvulun Harlap, the Dean Emeritus of Reitz. Speak to Rabbi Harlap here about the one summer he spent with his grandfather in Eretz Israel. He has many, many stories. But Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Harlap was a Mekubal from the Yeshiva Yashan in Yerushalayim, got connected to Rav Kluk, and became one of Rav Kluk's closest Talmidim. Rav Kluk during World War I was stuck in Europe. He went to attend a Gurdjieff convention, and World War I broke out, so he was stuck there. First he was in Switzerland, and then he went to England. This is a letter Yaakov Moshe Harlap sent to Rav Kluk when Rav Kluk was in England, I think. The letter talks about how there are problems in Yerushalayim. So I think he's talking about how people aren't learning enough Bekiyos. People don't know just all the Mishnayos and all Shas. So then he says, we have this problem. We want to reveal the holy soul of the nation. Great. Look at the second paragraph. Now that you and I are corresponding with letters, something we weren't able to do at the beginning of the war, I hope Hashem is not going to abandon his chesed with us. That all the mayanos of chachma bina will be opened up through you, the yachid v'niskav shebador. And this is going to be through your constant intention, thought. That you should be constantly thinking about me and constantly trying to elevate me spiritually. Think about our connection. Here comes the key line. The ofen, shenishmas Yechizkiya, melech Yehuda, mufia b'hadra b'malos kavod maran shlita, tis'achid yakad, and nishmas Yosan ben Uziyah, melech Yehuda, l'shulvin otz chera b'beis ha-mitrash, l'achkemes kol olam kulo b'mar t'arasino kadosha. In the middle of a letter, again, this is a documented letter. There's a footnote here. It's not the only time Yaakov Moshe Harlap or the Nazir refers to this. Apparently, everybody in that close circle knew that Rav Kluk was a Gilgal of Chizkiyahu. And by Rav Kluk constantly thinking about Yaakov Moshe Harlap, we're going to be able to combine Chizkiyahu and Yosam and the neshama of Chizkiyahu, the neshama of Yosam, and that's going to have a tikkun in the world. Dr. Sholal does a great job of showing how Rav Kluk himself and Rav Kluk's inner circle was a highly, obviously, all these people were major Talmidei Chachamim and Nigla also. And they're doing a lot of practical things politically, socially, in terms of the Yeshiva, in terms of fundraising, in terms of all these things. But at their core, they were Mamish Kabbalists, hardcore Kabbalists. Let's look at source number 6. Another line from Rav Kluk. Miyudi ala hakirosi. Again, Rav Kluk writes this in his own diaries. He didn't think this was ever going to be published. Who can recognize me? Who recognizes the enthusiasm in my heart? That burns with the passion of Avas Hashem. I can't focus on anything limited. Because of my desire for infinity, because I'm in love with God. And there are several pieces like this in first person, Rav Kluk writing in his own diaries. How does this affect Rav Kluk's methodology in terms of Jewish philosophy? How does this affect Orot and Orot HaKodesh and all of these things? So look at source number 7 for a second. So the first thing is that kashalim ma'od la'asok b'nyanei halakha levad, v'ein b'nyanei agada levad, b'nyanei nikla levad, b'nyanei nisra levad. It's difficult for me to focus on a single discipline. There's somebody who mamish knew all these things about that. But it's hard for me to focus on a single discipline at a time. It's hard for me to know if I should have a munef shuta, or I should start researching philosophical methodology in terms of finding Hashem. Should I isolate myself like other tzaddikim did, or should I become connected with Amona like other tzaddikim did? I have all these disparate dialectical desires pushing me in different directions. Everything, all these disparate disciplines, I have to absorb. We talk and through the unity of the highly elevated supernal levels. I'm going to have to make us with Hashem. And through my connecting, my unification of all these different disciplines, I am going to elevate the holiness, the aura of Kodesh, of Knesset Israel, in thought and action into the source of his life. I dream great dreams. I'm going to fly up to the heavens. So you see how the Rav Kook's personality, his self-definition of a tzaddik, somebody who is, so to speak, is burning love, experiential burning love for Hashem, is causing him to not focus on a single discipline, but try to unify everything together. And while that might be very admirable, and it's obviously reading this piece is very inspirational, it doesn't make for easy reading in terms of the reader, because you have somebody who's drawing from so many different disciplines at the same time, and he's constantly jumping back and forth between the disciplines. It doesn't make for an organized read. Rav Kook didn't organize his own work. His students organized his work for him. And it doesn't make for an easy read, because you don't know if a piece is coming from a Zohar or a piece is coming from Rambam or a Nebuchadnezzar, or some combination between the two that happened in Rav Kook's mind. So everything Rav Kook says is sourced. His own, he had this experiential connection to Hashem, which also he was trying to capture in his piece, in his writings. And he's trying to draw from all these different disciplines at the same time. But the major problem of Kook found in terms of writing Jewish philosophy, writing down his thoughts, is something which he writes about a decent amount in his diaries, is source number 8. He says, great rivers are pouring forth in my heart. Great springs, white springs, are opening in front of me. Torah, mitzvah, their lights, are shining on me the brightness of their lines. Ashrei Kalki. Thank you, Hashem. Praiseworthy, happy is my portion. My portion is with Hashem. Thank you, Hashem. Everything appears before me, is drawn before me in a complete and shining approach. What's the problem? My lips are too narrow. They're too tired. They're unable to capture this approach, this unified approach that's coming through me because of who I am as a person, because of everything I know, because of my dreams. I can't articulate it. I don't have a way to say it out. I will be able to sing your songs. And this is I think if I recall correctly, it's also part of her book. Dr. Shola points out that Rav Kook has trouble writing, because you imagine somebody who knows everything, who's so experientially connected, things are fitting together in him, he's constantly running back and forth between different disciplines, it's hard to actually articulate your thoughts. It's clear Rav Kook did think he had a systematic philosophy. He had a conversation with the Nazir, which the Nazir records. He sat down with the Nazir, and he told the Nazir, these are the pillars of my philosophy. These are the foundational points from which everything else flows. And Yiras Hashem will be going through some of the major themes. And the major themes in his writings are the major themes that he tells Nazir about. But he didn't have a way, it seems, to properly organize or articulate his own thought system. So what do you do? You want to write down this Shita Shleima Mapakyat. You want to write down your experiences. You want to write down this approach that you feel like Hashem is almost giving you as a gift, and it's your obligation to spread it to the rest of the world. We just don't have the words to capture your feelings, your thoughts, your emotions, and your ideas. So if Rav Kook developed certain strategies to write, which account for the difficulty in Rav Kook that we encounter when we try to understand Rav Kook. Source number 9, strategy number 1. Says your turtle with the lefanai letalot gagrei orot shobrakim miliot ma'arich b'tiorim mishuladim. It's better for me to draw out small kernels of lightning orot shobrakim from writing long essays with integrated and well developed descriptions. Habrakim ba'im mitalcha zora pnimi shanashama b'tiviyuta. These lightning flashes come from the soul, from the naturalness of the soul. Writing longer essays comes from a more developed thought process. So what does Rav Kook prefer to do? Write in short spurts. Get an inspiration, write it down. Is he going to develop the idea? Is he going to explain the idea? No. He's just going to get it and write it down. So I think most of the pieces we have from Rav Kook, if you look through Oroz or the Kodesh, they're a paragraph long, two paragraphs long, three paragraphs long, a page long, two pages, but that's about it. Rav Kook did write developed essays. He published newspapers, he published in journals, he wrote developed essays, as we're going to see, read the end of the piece. It's good to do both. It's good to capture your thoughts in their original form, but also to write longer and developed essays. So if you want to understand a particular idea in Rav Kook's thought, it's not enough to find one place he talks about it and just try to understand that one piece. Because he says, he might have had a thought about the nature of Gula Yisrael, the nature of Am Yisrael, the nature of whatever it is, several different times over the course of his lifetime. And each time he thought about it, he tried to capture a certain facet. He thought about a certain facet of it, and one facet of it is captured within one piece. But you have to gather all these paragraphs together to understand the fuller picture of what he was trying to do. Strategy number two. Mishnato Sharaf Kup is a book by Tzvi Yaron. He's quoting this from somewhere, but I forgot the original source. This is from Rav Kook. My thoughts are as wide as seas. B'safa prozit labiyam ba'uchala. I can't express them in prose. Shelo b'tovati, against my will, against my betterment, my better judgment, hineni mukhrak liot mishorer. I have to be a poet. Av a mishorer kashi, but a free poet. I can't be bound to the shackles of, I think, rhyme and meter, is the definition of those two things. I flee from regular prose because of its narrowness. Rav Kook did write regular poetry, poems that rhyme, and they're published in one of the books of Oroz. But most of the pieces from Rav Kook, as we've seen today, are lyrical. They're not poetry in the classic form with rhyme and meter, but they're written lyrically. Why poetry? Because the prose is too confining. In trying to capture an experience, trying to capture an image, a shita muvhaket, an approach, as he's saying, which is not just a congregation of ideas, but also an experience, poetry might be a better way of doing it, because the difference between a poem and regular writing is that a poem sometimes is able to create an image in the mind of what's going on. I think the Sfas Emes says that the reason why Shira in the Torah is written Rechaim HaGabalavana, that you have more white spaces in the Shira in the Torah, is because there's poetry, songs try to capture more that can't be written. Prose is you have a lot of black text, a lot that is written. You're trying to sing a song, you're trying to capture something that can't be articulated in words. That's why there's more white space in those areas of the Torah. So Rav Kook was trying to capture something that you couldn't articulate in a regular language, so he went towards poetry, went towards writing lyrically. It doesn't make for an easy read, but again, these are Rav Kook's strategies for how to write, try to capture his own ideas. Source number 11, also something which is Rav Kook's strategy, a third strategy of Rav Kook, which also doesn't make for easy reading. Anin sarika daber harbe odot, that's me. I have to talk a lot about myself. I have to understand myself. Through understanding myself, I'm going to understand everything else. And we'll talk about why that is for Rav Kook in terms of his philosophy. But Rav Kook's writing, very frequently, even if it's written in third person, apparently is autobiographical. So again, he's trying to capture his own ideas, trying to capture his own emotions, his own experiences. he sort of writes from an autobiographical perspective. So what we didn't do today was go through some of the basic ideas in a thought about Koch. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, one of the basic ideas of Europe and Solomon, that's going to affect almost everything he writes about. Koch also has some basic ideas that affect almost everything he writes about, but before we get to the ideas, just in terms of the methodology, the way he developed his own thought system, it's some combination of knowing all the sources, not being able to focus on any particular source in any particular time, things going through his own mind, which again is not just a mind, it's an experience of a tzaddik in this world, being unable to articulate all those things, and coming up with these strategies in order to best capture what his thoughts and his feelings and emotions and experiences were, in order to teach them to other people. And the last source is probably, from what I understand, is probably the clearest programmatic source for what Rav Koch is trying to accomplish while writing. Let's just read it, and we'll stop over here. It says, it's not for naught that Hashem created me with a constant desire for hidden things, for Kabbalah, for mystical things. It's not for naught God brought me to Israel. It's not for naught Hashem created me with a certain inner purity. Again, he was created this way. They said that's the way he self-describes. Even though I have so many faults, I have more faults than your average Ben Torah. And I have more faults than your average spiritually sensitive person. Why did Hashem plant all these things within me? To use all of these faculties to light up the world. To create a literature, create writing that's filled with the secrets of Torah, filled with Kabbalah, but on the other hand, it's popular and shavu l'chol nefesh, something which is accessible. Filled with song and might, and not just crazy mysticism, but guarded with, armed with Sichot Tov and Bikoret Emana and some criticism of what's going on, in order to bring the ultimate Gevura. Rav Koch basically is saying that Hashem created him in a certain way, gave him certain talents, gave him certain knowledge and certain feelings to create a literature that's filled with the secrets of Kabbalah that's going to help advance the messianic process and help advance the Geula of Am Yisrael and the Geula of the world. And in Yirat Hashem, we'll be able to look at some of these ideas more closely as the semester goes on.